we're beginning here on the top of Nun Aleph and Nun Aleph by the two dots. The Mishnah says that not just the Bechor has to be done with Manitsuri and Shekel Kodesh, but enumerates other items there, including Shloshim Shel Eved, Kamishim Shel Unes, Uvshel Mifateh. And the Gemara asks about that, Hatu Lomali. What do I need to add those items in? Hatanele Reisha. You already enumerated it, you already said it in the Reisha. At the end of the Mishnah, it writes, V'chulam b'shekel ha-kodesh b'manetzuri. That each of them have to be done b'shekel ha-kodesh b'manetzuri. But the mission already opened up. Chamesh shleim shoben b'manetzuri. And then it includes these other items. Shloshim shel eved, chamishim shel neis b'mefadeh, meir shemotzi shemra. So then what's the kulam b'shekel ha-kodesh b'manetzuri doing at the end of the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, oneis u'matzi shemra yitzrich. We need the line at the end of the Mishnah because of these two items. Salkadat chamina, I would have thought, teven deloktiv behu shkalim, since the word shekel does not appear by them, ema zuze ba'alma, maybe you don't have to give a sela, maybe they're not based on the shekel HaKodesh, rather a zuz, which is a dinar, would have been enough. Kamash malan, the melev kayalfe mehododi, that they are learnt from each other. Now, the simple way to read that is that you have a number of items that are mentioned here. Those items have the word shekel appear with them. And the word shekel appears, we already said before, that a shekel means a selatsuri. And so therefore, when it says shekel kesef in the Torah, we know that means a selatsuri. Some of them only have the word kesef written by them, not shekel. And therefore, you would have thought that a zuz would be enough. You wouldn't need a shekel. You wouldn't need a selatsuri. So from the context of either them being joined together in the Mishnah, or more likely in the Torah, there is a correlation between these items. Given that fact, we learn that there is also a requirement of Shekel Kodesh by Ones Umotzi Shemra. The way Rashi reads it is interesting, which is, he says, all the other items that are enumerated in the Mishnah, we know for sure that it's Sela, because it says by each one of them. By Pidyon Ben it says, Chameshit shkalim legugolet. By Eved it says shloshim shkalim itein nadunav. Ube mifateh it says kesef ishkol with the word shekel. But ones and motzi shemra the word shekel doesn't appear. So I would have thought that each one of them is determined by what's written by it. Those that have the word shkalim written by it have to use shkalim. And where there's no shkalim, you give dinarim and not shkalim. So therefore, the Seifa finishes off the Mishnah with Bikulam b'shekel ha-kodesh, to tell you that all of them are b'shekel ha-kodesh. So as opposed to the first line of the Mishnah, which just says b'manet tsuri, that just says it has to be tsurian coin or tsurian currency. The latter part of the Mishnah says kulam b'shekel ha-kodesh b'manet tsuri. The addition of shekel ha-kodesh is what tells you that piece of information. So they are learned yalfei me'adodi. The way that Rashi is learning Yalfi Me'adodi means that we learn from the fact that we said yesterday, Kol HaKesef Katsuvin Bamur BaTorah is Kesef Tsuri. And therefore, based on that, we're going to say that they're all Shekel HaKodesh. You don't have to learn it that way. Rashi uses that as the limud. Not that they're learned one from the other, it's that they're learned from the principle as a whole. The principle as a whole is that whenever you have a fixed amount of Kesef that's brought in the Torah, it's speaking about Kesef Tsuri. And that Kesef Tsuri is a Sela. That's the way Rashi learns it. Again, you could learn it simply that I know it by Pidyon Ben, I know it by Shloshim Shel Eved, and I know it by Mifateh. So Ones and Motzi Shemra, I can learn from those other items. Those other items that come to paradigm, I can learn from them. Or Ones and Motzi Shemra are very similar to Mifateh, and every one could teach from the other. We can learn from Mifateh to those that the Kesef it's speaking about is Kesef of Sela. So that's why the Mishnah repeated that line in the end, to add in the words Shekel Kodesh, to tell you that they all require payment in Shkalim, and that's even Ones and Motzi Shemra, where the word Shekel never appears by them in the Torah. Now, in our Gemara, we do not have this. Rashi writes, It's Svarim Dichtov Hachi. There are Svarim that have this. Shita Mikubetz brings it in Ot Dalet, because of the, and he says there are Svarim, Yishanim, older Svarim that have this in the Girsa. And the Gemara has a little piece here that doesn't appear in our Gemara, which is B'chulan nifdim b'kesef u'shvei kesef. The Mishnah says that they can all be redeemed with money or in-kind payment. So you don't have to actually use cash. You can get whatever it is that you want. So the Gemara asks, Vane b'nei pidyon inu? Not all of these things are issues of pidyon. Why are you speaking about pidyon? Pidyon is when you come to redeem something. Most of these items are restitution that is being paid. So why do you call that pidyon? So the Gemara says, Hachi kamar, b'chol ha-nifdim, nifdim b'kesef u'shvei kesef. So it adds in a conditional clause that says, b'chol ha-nifdim, anything that is redeemed should be redeemed with kesef or shvei kesef. So they just add in that little line, b'chol nifdim, in order to make the Mishnah make sense, because, yes, by pidyon ha-b'chor, you're talking about redemption, but when you're talking about these other items, these are penalties, kenasot, or restitution. Pidyon doesn't make sense. So therefore, when you says v'chulan nivdin, it doesn't mean kulan, but rather anything that needs diya, then you can do it b'kesef u'shvei kesef. Right now, back into our Gemara, says chutz min hashkalim. With the exception of the machatzita shekel, everything can be paid in kind. We're going to be paid with something that is of equivalent value. But the exception is that the chatzi shekel has to be paid in a chatzi shekel, in currency, not in in-kind payment. Tana chutz min hashkalim umaser v'rayon. We have a braita that actually adds two other items to the list. Our Mishnah only says shkalim are an exception to the list. The braita adds in maser sheni, has to be brought in currency and not in in-kind payment. V'rayon is ri'iyah, is the requirement to bring a korban when you do aliyah the regel. Lo yira ufanai reikam, you're not allowed to appear before me empty-handed. The requirement to bring something is called rayon. The rayon has a minimum of shtei ma'ah. It has to be worth at least two ma'ot. That money or that payment has to be brought, again, in cash. Shkalim. How do I know that's the case? It's not. Because the Mishnah says, by shkalim, mitzarfim shkalim, the dar bonot is what we have in our Gemara. In the Mishnayot, it's dar konot. Mipnei masui haderech. Because of the difficulty of transporting them on the way, we allow you to consolidate them onto darkonot. Darkonot are gold coins. And so gold holds multiple value to silver. We saw that yesterday, that the relationship was 25 to 1, and the Rabbeinu Tam reduced that down to 12 to 1 because the coin was bigger. But still, if you can consolidate at either 12 to 1 or 25 to 1 ratio, and you're traveling by foot up to Yerushalayim, it's a lot easier if you bring it on gold stored value. So the Mishnah there says that you're allowed to consolidate the shkalim onto these darkonot because of masuya derech. And the Reino Gershom says that the reason out of this Mishnah is taima d'vipnei masuya derech. It's only because of the burden of the way. Halav hachi ein podim elo b'kesef. Absent that, you can only use silver. So he sees it as being a deal, that this is a special dispensation for carrying it, that you're allowed to do it onto gold. Absent that, it would have to be on silver coins, whereas Rashi says that the limud is that you can do it onto darkonot, but you can't do it onto a margalit. You can't do it onto some sort of pearl, some sort of precious stone, precious item, in order to redeem it. By Maaser Sheni, Dichtiv, Vetzarta Kesef Biyadecha. But Maaser Sheni, it specifically says that you will take the Kesef Biyadecha. And there it says Vitzarta, and Rabbi Akiva in other places said Tzarta means it has to have a tzurah. It has to be minted coins, not just a slug, not an asimon as the Gemara calls it. It has to be something with a minted impression on the coin. Vitzarta kesef biyadecha, and the Torah specifies that you bring the Maaser Sheni up on kesef. So there is a specific requirement of kesef. V'harayon, Rashi says here, Tani Rav Yosef, the bright is, it's telling you that you may not bring dross up to the azara. That's actually supporting or giving us the information about why rayon has to come in coins and not in dross, not in just plain silver. It has to come in coinage. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that it's not that this Tanaiter of Yosef is adding anything. That without the Breita, you could have known the same information. What the Breita is doing is giving the reason why you have to bring it up in a coin. Is because we're afraid that people are going to bring it up to the Azara, and they're going to bring up something that's not going to be worth Tuma'ah. You have to have a minimum of Tuma'ah value in the Ri'iyah, and we're afraid that people are going to start bringing up this dross or these slugs of metal, and then it's going to turn out that it's not worth Tumah Ot Kesef. How do we ensure that it's always worth Tumah Kesef? Bring Tumah. And then we know it's worth Tumah Kesef. We don't have to argue about what the value is. So for that reason, they said just bring Tumah. So Tosafot sees Tanei de Rabbi Yosef as the reason why they asked for the coinage. Rashi says it as the proof to the fact that Rayon has to be brought up with Kesef. Now Rashi says that the reason behind all of these is because when it comes to other items or in-kind payments, the prices are volatile. The prices fluctuate. And so what we don't want is you, for instance, bringing up a chatzi shekel where the item that you're giving or the object that you use for your in-kind payment, the price is shifting all the time. And then we don't know if you gave a chatzi shekel, you didn't give a chatzi shekel, whether we got more, we got less. On the other hand, he says with regards to money, aval tiva lo zayo. When it comes to coinage or currency, it doesn't depreciate. This is what we discussed yesterday, the issue that whenever you're dealing with two objects, you have to determine which one is the static and what price is moving. So here Rashi makes the assumption that the currency is the static price and that the prices of the objects that you're buying with the money are fluctuating. So that means that whatever the value is fixed. And then when the prices move, that's because the object has some differential in value, either because people want more of it, there's less of it, there's depreciation and appreciation of the object you buy. Obviously, you could look at it the other way around. You could look at it as the object being a static value, and the currency is fluctuating up and down. Today, that is a much more common approach or view, because again, the stored value that they're using in their day is they're using real metal underlining coinage, where it's true before 1972 as well, that currencies did not fluctuate as much or as freely, partly because they were pegged, partly because they were backed by the gold standard, and therefore they were much less volatile. When you don't have that, and the currency is on the full faith of the government that's backing them, then there's a much more volatility inside of the currencies. But we discussed this in the introduction yesterday, again back in the beginning of Perek HaZahav, the first Mishnah in Perek HaZahav, has the same question. How do I know when I have two items and I'm bartering between them, how do I know which one's the currency and which one is the object that I'm buying? It has that problem with gold. Gold sometimes is an object of purchase, and sometimes it is the currency itself. Like here you have the Darko note, which are gold coins. But if gold coins relative to silver, you would consider the silver coins as currency and the gold to be the object. So that creates this problem of fluctuating prices. But what Rashi says is the reason they only wanted Shkolim to come in Chatzi Shekel was for the benefit of the Mikdash. First of all, they don't have to unload this stuff every time it comes up there. They have to liquidate it in order to get the money to use for the Mikdash. Number two is they don't want to have to argue about the pricing, what it's worth, what it's not worth. The price when they sent it was worth this. When it got there, it was worth something else. They want to keep everything at a standard rate or standard price. So if you use Machatzita Shekel, then again, it's always the same price. It's a Machatzita Shekel, and there's no appreciation, depreciation to worry about. Especially since they were using, as we said before, Manetsuri, which we discussed was the whole point of Manetsuri, was that it was this, some apolitical, very high quality metal currency that did not fluctuate in price because of that standard, and therefore was seen as a standard bearer or a static type of value. Ein Pudim, Nalai Redim, Lo Bavadim, you can't use Nebuchadnezzar as the exchange value, Velo Bishtarot, can't use a Shtar. Over here, the star is an IOU. Somebody owes you money. So now you're a creditor. You can't take that document of credit and then use that as the payment for the pidyon that you're going to do. Velo bikarkot. And you can't use real property as the value that you use in exchange for the pidyon. Velo bekdeshot. This is a difficult line in the Mishnah, which the Gemara will pick up, which says you can't use hekdesh to redeem it. Of course you can't use hekdesh, it's not yours. That's the question the Gemara asks. Katav lakohen. If he writes to the kohen, shuchayav teit chamesha shkalim, if he writes to the kohen, instead of handing him actual cash, he says to him, I owe you a 5 shekel, and then you'll pay it in the future. So instead of handing him cash, he basically hands him a check, and says, hey, you'll get the money in the future. Chayav liteno. First of all, you're obligated to give it to him now because of the fact that you said I owe you and that you say that I owe the money. Ubno eno padoi. But when you do pay the money, it does not work as pidyon. We'll have to understand that. The Gemara will discuss why that is, that it doesn't work. The Beinu Gershom says over here, Ubano Enu Padui. His son is not redeemed, Achi Yitain, until he gives the money. The Beinu Gershom, unlike most of the Rishonim, including Rashi, who think that even after you give it, you're still not redeeming the child. The Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, Achi Yitain, until he gives it. Once he gives it, his ben is Padui. Tosfot over here mentions a Rabbeinu Tam that we find in the Gemara in Ketubot, where the Rabbeinu Tam says that one can obligate themselves even though they're not obligated. It's actually the way that they use today in terms of halachic Yerusha in order to bypass the problem of all Yerusha goes to the male children and not to the female children. One of the ways that they do this is that they write a huge outstanding debt that is owed to the daughter. And then it says that if the daughter is given this and this, then she will forgive the debt. If not, there will be an outstanding debt, and that debt will have a primary lien on the estate, and therefore she'll be able to collect based on that primary debt. Now, the debt doesn't exist. So how do you create a debt, or how do you say that I owe money if you don't owe money? So Rabbeinu Tam, there in Ketubot, in a number of places, mentions that one can, despite the fact that they owe no money, a person can say that I owe money. I owe money. He's obligating himself as a debtor to pay in the future for debts that he never had outstanding. And that is because Hodat Baldin Kamei Eidim Dami. When a person admits that they have something or they owe something, we don't question the authoritativeness of the fact that they owe money. They're indebting themselves. He uses it in this place, the Tosfos quotes it in a context similar to this, where you say, I owe you, and then even though you don't owe them, doesn't matter. The fact that you said, I owe you, makes you now a debtor, even though you really never really owed the money. Number two, he uses it by a ketubah. By the case of getting married, it says in the ketubah that I am encumbering all my property to this ketubah, and all the money that I have will cover the cost of the ketubah. And Rabbeinu Tam says, the guy's penniless. So what exactly is he promising as being the credit for supporting the ketubah? It's the property he acquires in the future. That's not necessarily true. Property he acquires in the future isn't necessarily encumbered to the ketubah. So then how is it that he encumbers himself if it's not the current property that he has? The Rabbeinu Tam invokes the same principle, which is the chatan comes before us and says that I'm going to guarantee the ketubah. I'm going to take care of all the monies that I say in the ketubah. We're not questioning whether he does or doesn't. When he tells us that he has this money or he will owe this money, we assume that he has those assets. And we don't question the fact because Hodat Baldin Kamei Eidim Dami. When he tells us he has the assets, he has the assets, and we assume those assets are available even though he's penniless. So that's the Rabbeinu Tam's idea, and a similar Tosafot brings in the context here that when you tell the Kohen you owe him the money, even though you don't owe him the money, because the Pidyon HaBen's not going to work, you still owe the money because you indebted yourself, even though there's no debt outstanding, that's enough to make you chayav to prepay or to compensate in that case. Fikach im ratza kohen liten lo b'matana rashai. It's a little hard to understand why it's lefikach. The way that Rashi says it, in this scenario where the father's going to have to pay him the money and then pay for a pidyon haben again, the kohen has the right to give him the money back because he's getting paid twice, but there's no other way for him to get the money back. Because he owes the money, the Kohen's entitled to keep it, and if he wants to pay the Kohen, he's going to have to pay again. The Kohen can make his own decision if he wants to refund him the money or not refund him the money. That's how Rashi uses the fikach. The Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, says, the fikach, hoel umamona Kohen, since the money belongs to the Kohen, imratza Kohen litein lo matana, otan heislaim shikibimanu rashai. So he says it's a totally different issue. The fact is that the money, once given to the Kohen can do what he pleases with it. Since he can do what he pleases with the money, it's his money. If he chooses to give it back to the person who gave it to him, that's all right too. You can do whatever you want with your money, and therefore Pidyon HaBen, the recipient, the Kohen, has a right to decide what he wants to do with that money. Amafrish Pidyon Beno, person who separates out the money to pay for his Pidyon HaBen, Ba'avad, and then the money got lost, Chayav Achriyuto. He is responsible for the monies, meaning that the child is not redeemed until the money reaches the Kohen. Now they bring a quote, which is, Yalach ufodet ufdeh. It's actually no pasuk like that. They're clipping pieces from the pasuk, which is, Kopete rechem the chol basar she yekrivu l'Hashem adamu ve'ema yelach ach podotifte tabakor. So they skip the word ach in the middle there, but what they're saying is yelach. Yelach is to Aharon. So when is the pidyon ben done? Yelach. When it comes to you, Aharon. Once it reaches the Kohen, then the pidyon is done. That's when the podotifte happens. If it doesn't reach Aharon, then the podotifte didn't happen. That's why you're responsible for the money until it reaches the Kohen. Matnitin deloki Rabbi. Our mission is clearly not authored by Rabbi, because Rabbi's position is differentiated from our Mishnah, the Tanya. Rabbi Omer, b'chol podim b'chor adam. With any item you can redeem a b'chor adam, chutz min ashtarot, with the exception of a shtar. A shtar being here, one of the two shtarot that we noted, either a shtar where someone else owes you money, and then you're trying to use that to pay, or when you write an IOU to the Kohen, neither of those work according to Rabbi, but unlike our Mishnah, avadim and karkot would work as materials for redemption. Over here, Rabbi mentions b'chor adam. Rashi, in his Girsa of our Mishnah, says, ein podim b'chor adam. Rashi says that our Mishnah is a reference to b'chor adam, and not to pidyon in general. So, contextually, it makes sense. Question of whether this has broader application. The Gemara in other places deals with pidyon, and whether these items can be used. The Gemara in Baba Kama, which we're going to quote partially over here as well, deals with the regards to other items. Rashi says it's speaking about only b'chor adam in our Mishnah, and you can see the similar sentiment in the words of Rabbi here. My time at the Rabbi, what's Rabbi's reasoning? Daresh ribuye umiyute. He does doresh the ribuye umiyut. Again, there are two different ways to be doresh the Torah, klal uprat uchlal, which is the Rabbi Shmuel Omer that we say each morning. There's an alternate way, which is ribuy miyut and ribuy. Basic or key element that differentiates them is the connection between the miyut or the prat and the klal and the ribuy. By klal or prat to klal, the prat is coming to define, is coming to give meaning or explanation to the klal. Whereas in a case of ribuy miyut to ribuy, they stand independently of each other and each one functions by itself. No one of them is the explanation or the indication about the other. So that's the key difference between them. And Rabbi is Doresh, the Riboy, Miut, or Riboy. And over here, he claims that we have a Riboy, Miut, or Riboy. It's an interesting one. It says, Uftuyav mi ben chodesh. That's the beginning of the Pasuk. Pasuk reads, Uftuyav ben chodesh, tifteh be'erkecha. Kesev chameshit shkalim, shekel kodesh, esrim gerahu. You'll see in one second as we read the Gemara, Uftuyav mi ben chodesh is the first one. That's a riboy or a klal. Tifteh, which is the next word, is a klal or a riboy. And then be'erkecha kesef is the miut or the prat. So it turns out that you have a klal, klal, prat, or you have riboy, riboy, miut. The Gemara just reads it out of order that they get the riboy, miut, the riboy. It says, Uftuyav mi ben chodesh, that is riba. Be'erkecha kesef, that is miut. Tifteh is riba. Riba miut to riba, riba kol. Whenever you have a riboy miut to riboy, that makes it as if they include everything. In riboy miut to riboy, a riboy and miut alone would be the equivalent of a klal uprat to klal in the other method of limud. So now if riboy and miut equals klal uprat to klal, then when you add another riboy at the end, riba kol. Everything is included. Well, if everything is included, my rabbi kol mile. So anything can be used. My miut. So then the word or the one miut that you have there excludes one item, and that white item is the farthest fetched item from the context of which we're speaking. Miut shtarot, it excludes shtarot, as Rashi says over here, delo chashive mide. Rashi says that they're not worth anything, or they're not considered anything. I don't think it means it literally, but it means that they're the farthest thing from value in terms of exchange. They're all credit. They're all about IOU or commitment of the individual. There's no actual tangible value to the object itself. Rabbanan darshe klal uprat. The Rabbanan, who are the authors of our Mishnah, who disagree with Rabbi, learn it in the methodology of klal uprat uklal. Upduyav mi ben chodesh klal. Berkecha kesef prat. Tifteh chazar veklal. Klal uprat uklal. Iyata adan elokeina prat. So klal uprat uklal, again, we said the prat helps to define, helps to give peirush to the klal. So here, when you have a klal uprat uklal, the klal and the prat, had you just had that, the prat would define the klal. The second klal comes along to say, we're going to include anything that is ke'ena prat, anything that's similar to the prat. So then you have to come up with the common denominator or the factor that you think the prat represents, that then is anything in common with that would be included. Ma prat mifurash davar mitaltel gufo mamon. Berakah kesef. There are two features that we're focused on. One is that it's an item that is not real property. It's something that you can move around. And number two is it has inherent value. Af kol davar mitaltel gufo mamon. So too, anything that has inherent value and is not real property can be used in redemption. So yatsu, what's excluded from that? Karkaot. Shein metaltalim. Karkot are not included because they're real property. They're not metaltalim. They can't be moved around. Yatsu avadim. Eved kanani is excluded. Shukshu the karkot. Because there's a hekesh between them and karka, which is v'nachaltem levnechem acharechem nareshet achuzah. Because the Torah calls them property. It says that the eved kanani is property that you will pass as an inheritance to your children. So since they are treated or called like property, they're treated like property. And just like property can't be used, so too they cannot be used for a redemption. That's who shtarot. Shtarot are excluded. She'afo pish metaltalin. They are not real property, but nevertheless, ain't gufan mamon. They have no inherent value. A credit document inherently has no value. It's only what's written in it that says that I owe money that gives you value, that has implications both here with regards to using it as a mechanism for exchange. It also has implications in terms of nezek. If someone burns a shtar, they're not necessarily damaging your tangible value, because the star of the paper is not worth very much. They're damaging you indirectly because they wiped out the star that would have given you evidence to make a claim. And therefore, it's not nezek yashir. It's either garmi or groma, most likely garmi, and then it would depend on whether you say you're chayav be garmi, because there's no inherent value in the star. So when someone destroys it, they didn't do direct nezek. They did indirect nezek to you. And over here, it's not considered tangible value by which you can redeem with. Amar le Ravina the Mremar, Rabbi Ribuye Umiute Dorish. Does Rabbi really subscribe to the school of thought of Riboy, Miut, and Riboy, and not Klalu Pratu Klal? Va Rabbi Klalu Prati Dorish. We find in other places that Rabbi is Doresh Klalu Pratu Klal. So what is this? He's jumping between different methods of Limud. He can just choose what he wants, wherever he wants. Doesn't make sense. Because we actually learned this earlier in the Masechta. It's from the Gemara in Kiddushin. Bimartseya. It says that when the Eved Ivri wants to stay until the Yovel, after the elapsement of his first 6 years of work, then you pierce his ear. It says there that you pierce his ear. Bimartseya. The Tanya, Martseya. Ainli Elo Martseya. Sounds like you can only use a Martseya. Minayin the Rabot. How do I know you can include other tools to do the piercing of the ear? Including a soul, which is like a prick, a sirah, which is a thorn, a machat is a needle, a magdeach is a drill or borer, v'machtev is a stylus. How do I know all of those are okay to use? Tamalomar v'lakachto. You can take anything you can take. The rabot kol davar shenikach biyad divrei Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Yehuda. Anything you can carry, anything you can use, any tool would be sufficient to pierce the ear of the Eved Ivri. As Rashi notes over here, that excludes things like sam. If you use some sort of chemical to create the hole, that wouldn't work. You need a tool, something you can take in your hand and use. But other than that, there's no requirement of what the tool is, what the tool is made of. Rabbi Omer, Marzeya. Mar Marzeya Miuchad Shel Matechet. Just like a Marzeya is made from metal and all, which is a very fine point of on a metallic tip, then Av Kol Shel Matechet. So do all the other tools that you're going to use have to be metallic like it. Vermina and Maika Mithigay. What's the difference between their opinions between Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi? Rabbi Darish Klalei Uprate. That's because Rabbi is Doresh Klal Upratu Klal. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, Darish Ribuye Umiute. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda says it's a Riboy Miute Riboy. Because over there in the Gemara in Kiddushim, it says Velakachta, which is the word that we brought before, is a Klal. Marzeya is a Prat. Venatata Beozno. And then you're going to put it into his ears, Kazar Beklal. There's Klal upratu klal, and there ma klal that is mifurash, that is made out of metal, because it's using an awl for the marzeya, so that marzeya defines what is the common denominator we need with other items to include, and that is a metallic tool. That's what Rabbi says. Then Rabbi Yehuda says it's a riboy miut a riboy. That means you include everything, the miut excludes only one item. The one item that excludes using something like a sam, using something that is not a tool, that's not nekach biyad, that's what is excluded over there. So that, you see, Rabbi uses the drasha of klal u'prato klal, and not riboy miut uriboy. So my answer is in. Ba'alma, Rabbi klal u'prato darish. In general, Rabbi subscribes to the school of thought of klal u'prato klal, v'holcha k'detana debay Rabbi Shmuel. But over here, there's a trigger for him learning differently, and that is the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. The Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. Bamayim, bamayim shtei pe'amim. Why does the Torah mention mayim twice when it's speaking about the kosher fish that you can eat? It says that you need a snapir bakeset, and then it says bamayim. We just learned this actually in the Gemara in Chulin, but the Pasuk says, etzeh tochlu. This is what you're allowed to eat. We call it sher bamayim. Anything that's found in the water. Asher lo snapir v'kaskeset b'mayim. Anything that has fins and scales in the water. V'haynu shtei klalot. Those are two klalot, because it mentioned the word mayim twice. But then afterwards it says, b'yamim b'nichalim. In the live water bodies. From there you would have thought that the only places that you need snapir v'kaskeset is in the yamim and the nichalim. Because there it specifies what are the waters that we're speaking about. Yamim and Nechalim. So there you would have thought, snapir v'kaskeset is required in live water bodies, but if you have water that's collected water, like a mikveh, you just have water that was collected from rainwater, maybe there you wouldn't need a snapir v'kaskeset. If you learnt it as a klal u'prato klal, that would have been the outcome of the drasha. But over there, similar to over here, where I just read you the pasuk said, mikol asher b'mayim, and then only afterwards it says, bayamim u'nechalim. That means klal, klal, prat. So it's different than your standard klal prat u'klal, because the two klalot are written before the prat. And that's what we're noting over here. The Tanit Bar Yisrael says, bamayim, bamayim, shtei pamim, ein ze klal u'prat, ela ribo miut. The fact that it has the two klalim first and then the prat afterwards changes the method of limud. So normally you would learn klal u'prat u'klal. That's Rabbi's view with regards to the drasha. But in cases where you have a klal klal and then a prat, it changes from the methodology of klal u'prat u'klal to riboy miut uriboy. But it's because of the structure. And as I noted for you before, the pasuk says uftu yav mi ben chodesh. That's a riboy. Tifteh riboy. Then berka chakesef is the miut. So it's again riboy riboy miut, and that's why Rabbi over here does that. So Rabbi switches to Rebu and Miut to Rebu over here because of the oddity of the structure of the pasuk that it has klal klal and then the prat. So had it been the prat was in between the klal and klal, and he would have learned it as a klal prat to klal. Now that it's outside, then you don't learn it as a klal prat to klal. It's just ironic that it's the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel that's saying this, because Rabbi Shmuel Omer is the one who says that Shlosh Yisrei Midot, Shatorat Nidresh Bam. He never mentions this as one of the Shlosh Yisrei Midot. According to this, it should be one of the 14 Midot Shatorat Nidresh Bam, which is that sometimes you do a Riboy, Miut, and Riboy, not always a Klal U'prat U'klal. The way to deal with that is one of two ways. Either to say that Tana de Rabbi Shmuel is the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Shmuel. Tana de Rabbi Shmuel doesn't always reflect the position of Rabbi Yishmael. So that's one way to deal with it. The other way to say is that this is an oddity. This isn't something that is consistent in the Torah. Meaning that there are certain midot shatar nidresh bam which are always invoked and they apply across the board. There are certain that oddities or exceptions, and this is an exception to the rule, and that's why it's not enumerated in the list. V'rabbanan. Now, what do the Rabbanan do over here? They disagree with Rabbi and say that we do doresh shiklal u'prat u'klal. Amrei k'damrinu b'marova. They learn like in Eretz Yisrael. Kol makom shata motzei shtei klalot hasmuchim ze lazeh. Whenever you find two klalim in a row, and then a prat afterwards, hatel prat b'nehem, move the prat in between them, v'donam b'klal u'prat u'klal. They disagree with the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, basically. And in Eretz Yisrael, they say, even when it's a klal klal prat, it's still a klal u'prat u'klal. It doesn't turn into a riboy miut or riboy. So that's the machlok in between them, which is it that when you have a klal klal prat, it remains a klal prat u'klal? That's the view of the Rabbanan, and that's why in our Mishnah they exclude shtarot, karkaot, and abadim. Or do you view it in that unusual circumstance of klal klal prat as a riboy miut or riboy, which is the view of Rabbi, which would mean that you'd only exclude shtarot and nothing else from the methods of pidyon that you can use. Now, Gemara says, below be'ektei shot, you're not allowed to use ektei, in your question. Pshita. It's straightforward. Labdi deninu. It's not his money. How can he use it? Ema, you have to amend the reading of the Mishnah. Velo help they showed b'chol elu. It's not saying that you can't use hekdesh. Rather, hekdesh may not be redeemed by any of these items. Just like you can't redeem the pidyon b'chor with shtarot, avadim, and karkaot, so too, when you come to redeem hekdesh, you can't redeem it with karkaot, shtarot, and avadim. And that's learnt from the psukim in Torat Kohanim, as well as in Gemara Baba Kama deals with it as well, that hekdesh shot are excluded from these items as well, either because of a gzer shavu or because of a klal uprat uklal. Katav lekohen shu chayav lo chamisha shleim, chayav liten lo. Amar ula, dvar Torah beno padui. Min haTorah, his son is redeemed. Now here you can see it's in brackets over here. Likishi yitain, when he gives it. So, according to this view, the girsa that we have, the girsa that Rashi has, is that only once you have given it, would the pidyon have worked min haTorah. Meaning that everybody agrees that when you hand the shtar and say, I owe you, it doesn't work at that moment. Now, if you actually pay afterwards, then that payment, according to Ula, works min haTorah. There is an alternate view where the word klishi yitain is not found in our Gemara. And if you take out the word klishi yitain, that means that Ula thinks Dvar Torah beno padoi, when you handed in the credit document, it worked. So it's the credit document that fails based on this. And that means, like the Rabbeinu Gershom said on the Mishnah, if you actually do give the cash, it would work. Even despite all of this, it still would have worked. So that's the Machlok of Rishonim. Majority, the vast majority of Rishonim, including Rashi over here, believe that the Dvar Torah works when you pay the cash afterwards. And the Mishnah is telling you that the Rabbanan disallowed that, and it doesn't work at all. Whereas there's a minority of Rishonim, including the Bahag and the Rabbeinu Gershom, who say that when you hand that credit document, min haTorah, it works. The Chachamim suspended your ability to do that. But if you actually do hand the cash, it will work even after all this or despite all of this. So now that's what the Gemara says. My taima, ein beno padoi. If you tell me min haTorah, it works, why doesn't it work then in the Mishnah? Because we're afraid of what people are going to see and think. They're not going to understand when you handed the shtar to him that that wasn't the vehicle for the pidyon, that you're actually handing the cash afterwards and it was the cash that did the pidyon. They're just going to see an IOU. And then they're going to see you hand him IOU and not know that you paid the cash afterwards. Or you're going to just hand him a document of credit from someone else and then think that that's okay. Where there's no cash exchanging hands and then that's not okay. So in order to avoid that, the Chachamim suspended your ability to have the pidyon haben be effective in this situation because they don't want a mishap to come from it. Tana Tagamei Deri Rav Nachman. There was an Amora giving over Tanaic works in front of Rav Nachman. Bano padoi likishi yitain. His ben will be redeemed once the money is given. Amalei Rav Nachman, zo debi Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda stimto. These are the words of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda that are brought in the Stam, or in essence, it's a dat yachid. That is not the consensus opinion. That's the dat of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. We saw earlier in the Masechta Rashi back on Daf Lamed, it spoke about this issue of stimto. It does not mean that everywhere we have a Stam, this is the Tana. Rather, it means in this particular case, this Stam, Breita, that you're bringing, is really authored by Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, and it's a dat yachid. Tosafot in places says that, according to this, they actually had it written in their Breita. Their Breita said, Divrei Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, to make it into a dat yachid. Rashi does not require that. Rashi just simply says they knew that this daya that's brought in this Breita is attributed to a singular opinion, and it's not necessarily the broad or consensus opinion. Vamri law, zo Divrei Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Shimon Simta. And some say it's the position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Shimon, not Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Aval. V'chamim omrim, ein beno padoi. It doesn't work. V'ilchata, and the locha is, ein beno padoi. That his child is not redeemed. And again here, it sounds like he's not necessarily disagreeing with Ula. He's just saying that that's the dat of those tanaim, that if you actually paid it, it would go through and there's no gzerat chachamim. Whereas the view here of the ilchata, ein beno padoi, is the fact that even if you pay it, it doesn't work. Not midoraita, but me the Rabbanan, that there's a gzera de Rabbanan that prevents you from doing that. Fikach, imratzah kohen liten lo b'matana rashai. This is halacha the mice says, big implications over here. Tanina lahat etana Rabbanan. Our Mishnah now backs up, corroborates what we know from the Breita. The Tana Rabbanan, we have a Braita. Natnu la'asara kohanim bevatachat. He handed the 5 shekel to a number of kohanim, 10 kohanim in one shot. Yatsa. That works. Even though we said earlier, everybody agrees that it's chamesh velo chatzi chamesh. You have to give the full 5 shekel, not less than 5 shekel. That doesn't mean that you can't give less than 5 shekel to any given kohen. Just means that when you do the bidyon aben, you have to do the full amount. You can't do a partial amount. But once you give the full amount, even if it's to multiple kohanim, that works. That was the Tosafot back on Memchet Amud Bet. The top Tosafot there at the end mentioned that. B'zeh chazeh, if he adds it sequentially, yatsa. He also is yotzei. Rashi over here says that b'zeh chazeh is the kohen echad. That if you give it to a single kohen in a sequential manner, since it aggregates to 5 shekel, that works as pidyon aben. Others, like the Baalei Tosafot, see this as being, it's similar to the statement before, bevat achat. If you give it to 10 different kohanim, b'zeh chazeh, you hand it out. Slowly, you take it piece by piece, you're handing it out. You're still yotzei, because in the end, you gave the full 5 shekel that you were supposed to give. That's the way Tosafot understands it back on Memchet Amud Bet, that b'zeh chazeh is similar to the bevat achat case. From Rashi over here, it sounds like it might be a little different. Natlan vechziran. If the kohen takes them, receives them, and then returns them to the person, vechziran lo, yatsa, your yotzei. So this is the big chiddush over here, that even if, when the kohen has received the pidyon aben, he then has the right to do what he wants with them. Rashi said in the Mishnah that the fikach was connected to the fact that he was going to have to pay twice here. Therefore the kohen, if he wants to, can give it back. The Rabbeinu Gershom said no. What it's telling you is the money is going to the kohen, belongs to the kohen. Since it belongs to the kohen, he can do what he pleases with it. And if he pleases to give it back to someone else, the person who paid him, he can do such. And that's what the Braita is saying over here too. That the kohen has a right to refund, quote unquote, the money back to the person who paid him for the pidyon aben. And that does not negate the fact that the pidyon aben took place because he paid the money. Now if he chooses, he can refund him the money. He can do whatever he wants. He can give it to his children. He can give it back to the guy who gave it to him. He can spend it on whatever he wants. It's a choice of the kohen. If the choice of the kohen is to give it back to the person who gave it to him, that's fine as well. That was the practice of Rabbi Tarfon. He used to take the pidyon aben, the monies that he received, and then he would give them back afterwards. When the chachamim got wind of the fact that this was his practice, amru kiyem zeh halachazu. This individual, meaning Rabbi Tarfon, kept this halacha. Mar says, halacha zu betulo. That's the only halacha that Rabbi Tarfon kept. Ela kiyem zeh af halacha zu. Not only did he keep many halachot, but he kept this one as well. Now, what's the chiddush that he kept this one as well? Either that it means that it shows that this halacha is accepted, or maybe that's what it means, kiyem halacha zu, which is that he demonstrated that the halacha was such. By his practice, he showed that the law was that you have a right to give it back to the person who gave it to you. And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom, which says, Shegila l'chol, the law came, the Rashai l'achzir. That he was making it clear, or making it obvious, that that was the law because of his practice. So Rabbi Chanina, Avarogil, Meshokol, Umahader. Rabbi Chanina, like Rabbi Tarfon, had the same practice, which was that he would accept the monies, and then return them to the person who gave it to them. An individual who just redeemed his son was kind of loitering around, waiting to get the money back. He was anticipating the money back. He was expecting the money back. So then Rabbi Chanina turns to him and says, Amalei, lo gamart ve'yevit, midam bish avata, or midam bish, hilkach ein bancha padoy. There wasn't a pidyon aben over here. So now this is an amazing statement here by Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina says that you did something wrong in anticipating the money back. Rashi says in 2 lashonot, and it has a huge nafkamina in the lashon. Rashi says, midam pish avarata. You see, he adds in the words in the girsa avarata. You did something bad. Davar ra'asita, hilkach, ein bincha padoy im echzerein. Therefore, if I give you the money back, your son will not be redeemed. Because if I hand you the money back, then I am fulfilling your desire to have the money back, which means you never really gave them. And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom, where he says, "Veni rashay lachzirim lecha, I can't return them to you." Ho, velo gamarta b'datcha shirshelit, because you didn't really then intend them for me. Elit, but samely, I have to now keep them for myself. Yevin chapadoi, in order that your son will be redeemed. So I need to hold on to them in order for the pigeon to go through, because if I return them, that means that you never really gave them to me. And so now you cause the problem for yourself, which is that I can't return them to you. So that's one way Rashi reads it. The second Lashon in Rashi is, Afilo lo exzireim. Even if I don't give them back to you, ain bin chapadoi. Because, vidam bishavata. You did something bad, which means that when you gave the money, you didn't intend to give the money. You were expecting them back. You didn't really hand me the money. You weren't really paying the pigeon. You just handed them because you knew I was going to hand them back to you. That means that your pigeon didn't work at all. Even if I don't hand you the money back, it failed. So Rashi has two lashonot. There's a big nafkamina between how you read them. If you say midam bish, midam means anything. You did something bad. So the question is, what's the something bad? Meaning that the something bad is now that you prevented me from being able to give them back to you because that will undermine the pigeon. And that's what it means, midam bishavata. Had you not waited around, I could have handed them back to you. Or is it midam bishavata means that you did nothing now. Your whole action is undermined by what you just did now, and it's as if you didn't have a pigeon event. Tosafot brings a third way to read it, which is the word midam means mi'uma. Komar gamarta b'yavat midam, that you gave nothing. So that's another way to read it, similar to Rashi, which is now you gave something that is worthless because it won't work. Vod yesh tefaresh kein midam bishavata. Komar dara ra avarata, which is like the lashonot of Rashi. He says, "V'leish sfarim delotibu avarata elamidam bish." Just that it's a bad thing. V'tulo komar davar rahu komar din esek bish. It's like you made a bad decision, or you did something that was inappropriate over here, and therefore it has nafkaminot the halacha. Now, Tosfot asks your question and says, "Why doesn't it work over here? Why is this any worse than a matana amanach dachzir? Matana amanach dachzir works." And you're able to give a kinyan, person can be yotze in the mitzvah of lulav and etrog with that. And why not say the same thing over here? He gave it on condition that he's going to get it back. Why doesn't it work over here? He says, V'yesh lamar, da'ochra Rabbi Chanina, lo haya rotze l'skot, ela b'matana gemura. So Rabbi Chanina only wanted it. It's from Rabbi Chanina's side. It's not that it wouldn't have worked. Rabbi Chanina only wanted a matana gemura. Tasrina natan lasov, ibnei shenirek, ukoin haseya mebeit agranot. Because if he doesn't make it as a full matana, it starts to look like a Kohen or Messiah of the Beit HaGranot, which is the issue that you raised. If the people think he's going to give it back, and the only reason they're giving it to him is because he's going to give it back, basically, they're giving him the Pidyon Aben because of what he is doing, and therefore he is now facilitating the giving of the item to him. The Kohen or Messiah of Beit HaGranot means that he goes and works for free for the Baalim in order to get the Trumot and Masrot afterwards. So it's over here. The only reason he's getting the pigeon of Ben is because he refunds it. That looks like what's the Kohen and Messiah and Beit HaGranot. That's why Rabbi Chanina didn't want to give it back to him. Or why Rabbi Chanina was upset over here is because now he's making it look as if the only reason people are giving it to him is because he gives it back. And he says, Avo pisho to stam natano, even though this guy never specified that he wanted it back, Kaperush amanach yakzurlo. It is as if he said it, came into Ika Hekera the Milta. Since he did a demonstrable act that shows that that was his expectation, even though it was Dvarim Shebelev, that he included a demonstrable act where it's clear from his actions we know his intent, then that's already considered to be not Dvarim Shebelev, and it's as if it was a condition. So then Tosfot asks, wait a minute, isn't that a serious problem? At this point, Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Tarfon are going to corner the market for Pidyon HaBen. Nobody's going to give it to any other Kohen because you'd only give it to the Kohen who is the one who refunds it. And if he refunds it, then I'm going to choose that Kohen. He becomes, basically, Mayfair Brit Kohanim. He's ruining the whole covenant of the Kohanim because he's making it as if it doesn't exist anymore because he's refunding it each time. So Tosfot says, Umiu mitzah tema. Even show you Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Chanina, Makzirin, Kosha. If they do that, Nimsa Mashkitim, Brit HaLevi. Shiafsidu Shar Kohanim. Shloinu Elohim. They're not going to give to any more Kohanim and they're ruining the Brit. Because they were the ones who always gave it back. So he says it must have been that it wasn't clear to the person who was giving it that they'd always give it back. And therefore it's not a ruining. Maybe they only give it back when it was poor people, but not to people they thought were Ashirim. So Tosfot solves the problem by saying it wasn't 100% of the time that they gave it back. Either because they only give it back to poor people, not to rich people, and that means that it wasn't a guarantee that you were going to get it back. Depends what they thought of you. Or number two is that it wasn't a guarantee. They didn't always give it back Since they didn't always give it back, that's enough of an uncertainty that people aren't certain that if they bring it to you that they're necessarily going to get it back. But it tells you it has to come up a way to take them out of the parsha of basically vacuuming up all the Pidyon Bens that are out there because of their activity or their practice, and then that would then ruin it for everyone else who was a Kohen, and you're not allowed to act in that way. And so that's what it says, there has to be some sort of uncertainty in this practice. And that's true today too. Many times the Kohanim give it back, but there are some Kohanim that keep the money and they don't give it back. And even those that give it back don't necessarily give it back to the father, they give it back to the child, or they give it back to the grandchild, or to the another party. And therefore, it's no guarantee that you're getting it back, and that's why it's not a problem. Hamafrish pidyon bino vavad chayav b'achriyuto. Person who segregates out the monies for pidyon ben and they are lost, he is responsible to replace them. Minolan, how do we know this? Amar Reb Shimon Lakish, atya erech erech marachin. We learn a gzeirah shava of erech erech from arachin. Over here we read the pasuk before, v'yavi ben chodesh tifteh be'erkecha kesef. And also by the parshat arachim, it also uses the term erech or erkecha. And the gzeirah shava is just like by arachin, where you are responsible for it, because if you took a neder, you're responsible to fulfill the neder. Arachin are generated by your saying, erko alai or erech ploni alai. You generated a neder, and a neder makes you chayav. So once you're chayav in a neder, you can't get out of that neder until you discharge the obligation. So similarly over here, here by Pidyon HaBen, you won't be able to discharge the obligation until you paid the Kohen. Just like by Arachin, you can't discharge it until you've actually done what you said that you were going to do. So that's one limud. The other possibility is, Rav Dimi Amar Rabbi Yonatan says, V'chol b'rechor b'necha tibdeh, v'lo yira'u fanai reikam. So in Parshat Kitisa, it says there by the Shloshet Regalim that you have to redeem your b'chor. V'lo yira'u fanai reikam. Don't come up empty-handed to me. V'yolif reikam reikam me'olat re'iyah. And just like lo yira'u fanai reikam refers not there, but in other places to olat re'iyah. And over there, olat re'iyah chayav b'achriyuto. You are responsible for it, Rashi says, because it is a chuvah. If you appear in the Mikdash and you don't bring an olat riyah, you're in violation of lo yira'u fanai reikam. So it's an obligation upon you to make sure that you are not reikam there. So that chuvah means that you haven't discharged it until you've actually fulfilled that obligation. Now, Rashi points out, you can't use the lo yira'u fanai reikam there in the pasuk itself. Why do you need to go to olat riyah? The pasuk itself says, "V'chol b'chor b'necha lo tifteh, v'lo re'u fanei reikam." Just use that, "lo re'u fanei reikam." Rashi says it doesn't work because a b'chor does not need to be redeemed in the mikdash. The redemption of a b'chor can be done anywhere with any kohen. So it's not the same "lo re'u fanei reikam" as by olat riyah, where you're going to the mikdash and you can't appear empty-handed. That's a chovah. That's obligatory. This "lo re'u fanei reikam" is a different meaning, and therefore you need to use the gzeir shava in order to learn it. Then, Matkif La Rapapa, Rapapa asks about these limudim. A Rav Yonatan, Kanan Reish Lakish, Kra Lakra. You need to bring that pasuk for a pasuk. Our Mishnah already told you why, if you didn't bring it, you are responsible to bring it if it got lost on the way. Our Mishnah said that's because it says, Iyalach, Ba'ach, Padov Tifteh. They brought a quote from a pasuk. So the Mishnah brings a pasuk for the reason why. And now you're bringing me new reasons why from Pesukim. What is wrong with the pasuk that the Mishnah brought? So, Ella Amra Papa Hakeditani Taimo. Our Mishnah already brought the reason, which is Iyalach Achpado Tifteh. That's what I noted for you, that the pasuk is not quoted properly in the Mishnah, but it's Iyalach Achpado Tifteh, which is the real quote of the Mishnah, where the real quote of the pasuk. V'chi Itmar Reish Lakish Areisha Itmar. Reish Lakish's statement is not on the responsibility to bring the pidyon ben if it gets lost, it's your problem. Rather, on the earlier part of the Mishnah, if the child dies after it's already lived for 30 days, even though the father has yet to have given pidyon ben, he has to pay for the pidyon ben. Once it crossed over the 30-day threshold, he became chayav in pidyon ben. If he's chayav in pidyon ben, he has to start that obligation whether or not the child is still alive at this point. Even if the child passes away, you have to do it. Minolan, how do I know that's the case? How do you know that after the child passes away, you're still responsible? Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Ache Erech Erech Marachim. That's the Gzeir Shava from Marachim. Just like by Arachin, you are responsible for the Erech even after your death or the death of the person that you said. If you say Erekol Alai, if you say Erki Alai, if you say I'm responsible to bring my value, and that person then passes away, he is your Shem are responsible to bring the Erech. If he says Erkech Ploni Alai, he says so-and-so's value I have to bring, and that so-and-so passed away, he still has to bring it afterwards. And that is because we learn from, by Arachin, it says, Yarichenu. The Pasuk says an extra word of Yarichenu, Afilu Meit, even if he passes away. So too over here, even if he passes away, you're still Chayav, the father, to bring the Pidyon Haben. And then the Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Yonatan, V'chol Barichor Benecha Tifteh, V'lo Yerufanai Rekam, Alalan Yorshim Chayavim, Avkan Yorshim Chayavim. So too, the Yorshim are Chayavim over here. Just like by the case of Olat Re'iyah, the Yorshim are Chayav, that's because when it's a Korban Olah that the parent was already Chayavin, the inheritors have to bring the Olah on behalf of that individual. We have that by a woman who gives birth, if she's already brought her Chatat, then the Yorshim have to bring her Olah, that she is obligated in. So to over here, Olat Re'iyah, that you're Chayavin, once the Chiyuv was already generated, then not only does the Chiyuv devolve upon you, but as a lien on the estate and the Yorshim need to discharge that obligation on your behalf, so too over here, you are Chayav. It's interesting what Rashi says here. The Yorshim are Chayavim. What does it mean, the Yorshim are Chayavim? Lachar mitat ha'av v'ben. After the father and child pass away. Over here by Pidyon ha'ben, if it was just the father who passed away, the responsible party is the ben. Because the son has to do it if the father didn't do it. It has to be both that the father and son passed away for the Yorshim to kick in and have to give it. So over here we have two limudim. One limud is the fact that if the son passes away, the father is still responsible for the Pidyon HaBen, similar to by Arachin. And also, if the father and son pass away, the Yorshim, the inheritors, are responsible for it. Because in both of those cases, by the case of Arachin, as well as by the case of Olat Re'iyah, even in the absence of the individual is Chayav, you still have to pay, and that includes the Yorshim paying. So to over here, in the absence of the people that are Chayav, as long as you became Chayav, you are responsible to make that payment, Ayyadei the Yorshim. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Nun Aleph, Amud Bet.